Hi there, folks. Welcome to the A Minute to Midnight show. This is Tony coming to you from New Zealand, and with me on the show today, I have Eric Stogner, and Eric's in Georgia. But Eric, it's really nice to see you online in this interview today, but the last time I saw you was actually in Napier in New Zealand just a couple of, 3 weeks ago or something like that. We met up because you were here for a day or two, and it was really nice to meet you and your wife. My wife Holly and I met up with you and your wife Clara, and it was really good. So,
oh, likewise, we so enjoyed it. In some ways, it was definitely one of our top highlights of the trip. We were on a whole cruise around New Zealand, and that was one of the planned 7 stops. We really only got to about 4 of the 7 stops because of bad weather that somehow sprung up in both the beginning and at the end of the trip. But it was so good. Even 24 hours before, you and I had planned to meet up on the day in Napier, we had to shuffle and move it up a day again because the cruise and the weather, things happened. But I'm so glad it worked out. We had a short time. In fact, we even had talked about maybe doing a live show. But really, we were only there for a few hours, and we visited, and that was great fun. So here's the show after the show. It's great to talk to you live after visiting you and your country and a little bit of Australia, and it was such a neat visit. In fact, honestly, and this might be worth all the listeners hearing, maybe who aren't familiar with both the cultures, the biggest surprise that I've been sharing with people since being home is how very Americanized New Zealand and Australia were, because we were on ship with a ton of Australians. That's what surprised me is, wow, other than the accent, I feel like we're all in the same country, honestly. And the cultural, the music, the food, there were so many similarities. So it made it easy for me to visit. I enjoyed it, I was honestly surprised. I thought I'd hear a lot more differences. And I think what that says is one of America's biggest exports has been its media, its culture. Some ways, it seemed like both New Zealand and Australia had been on the uptake for a while. What was a pleasant surprise for me? It felt like everyone was still in the 80s and 90s of the USA in some ways, at least in terms of music and cultural references. I thought, wow, those are my best decades too. I love it.
Yeah, well, and of course, New Zealand still has a lot of shopping malls and different things like that still going, where in a lot of America, that's sort of closed down on a lot of them. But you mentioned the weather, because you had the weather disrupt the cruise and put things out because you had cyclones and different things. Well, it's crazy because it's only April and we've been hit by them. This is, I think, like at the moment we've been hit by really bad weather. There was flooding in Wellington. You got to see some of Wellington. Well, I'm sure some of what you got to see has been underwater in the last 24 to 48 hours, just crazy flooding and things like that. And so this is like the 4th or 5th time, and we're only in April, that New Zealand's been hit by extreme weather events, the types of things that used to happen once every few years, and yet we're having them constantly barraging us at the moment. I mean, it is just not like it ever was before. So some strange things are going on.
It seems to be our norm. All over the world in different places. And it just causes me to think back and remember, didn't Klaus Schwab warn us about this? That somehow the world would become more unpredictable, and he even included the weather. And I remember thinking, like, wow, how did you become such a weather prognosticator? Like, how are you that wise? Maybe there's more than wisdom at work here.
There was that document from, I think, about 1996, which was owning the weather in 2025, that it would be able to be used for warfare. So whether that's what's happening or not, I don't know. Jesus did tell us that things like the weather would go crazy at the end times and things too. So whether it's man-made, man-influenced, or it's natural things causing it, is up for debate. I think there's probably a combination of those two things. Plus, they are looking at things like climate lockdowns and that type of thing. So it is definitely unusual, the amount of crazy weather events we're having anyway. But yeah, it was great to catch up with you in New Zealand, even though it was only for a short period of time, and it was a bit of a drive for us to get to Napier and see you and things, because I don't live there, but it was definitely worth it, and we had a really nice time. So today, yeah, we're back to other sides of the world, and you're in Georgia, and my wife Holly, as I've mentioned a couple of shows ago, she's actually back in America as well at the moment, getting, you know, trying to continue her treatment for SIRS, and which is kind of hard being on my own here again. So just keep us in your prayers. But it was really nice. We all got on so well, you know, the four of us, when you were with us here. And, you know, hopefully sometime I'll get back to America and be able to catch up with you.
That would be great. Love to host you. And it's funny because you want to make these plans. That trip was actually 2.5-3 years in the making for us. And then it's even leading up to them, you see things going on in the world and you wonder, is something going to crop up at the last minute that we can't even go? Like, there are some cruise ships still stuck in the Strait of Hormuz right now. Mm. And I'm sure when they boarded those ships, they didn't really know. We went on an earlier cruise within the last year. It took us to right near outside of Venezuela. We were off the islands there, and you could literally see Venezuela, and you could see a couple new oil platforms that had been towed into place. And so, again, going into that, we're wondering, hey, all this stuff is percolating along with Trump and Venezuela. You know, what? I wonder if something will happen. Well, we went on our trip, no problem. As the week after we got home, no one was allowed to visit that area because of the military action. So it is a strange world where you wonder, you know, what's going on in the world where if you make your plans, will they come to pass? And like anything else, right? You just put it in the Lord's hands. Like, if it is your will and I get to go, then I get to go. Great. If not, you know, I'll be okay with it either way, or I need to be okay with it. But yeah, there's a lot of uncertainty that you just assume, you know, that you can book these travel, and we live in the modern era, and get on a plane. And, you know, if that flight doesn't, you know, gets delayed, there'll be another one. But there are world events where, you know, things may change and you may not be able to go.
I think it's looking very likely that travel will be severely curtailed in the near future. You know, we've got that war going on in Iran, which Trump keeps saying things like, I'm winning the war, like it's his own personal war. He's the chief of command of this, you know, great endeavor that he's put himself to. It's just very I-focused, I notice, and but, you know, we don't know what's going to happen once the ceasefire expires. As we're recording this, I think it's still got about 48 hours left of the ceasefire and whatever, and then who knows what will happen after that. So, yeah, we are definitely in crazy times where it's very unpredictable. And the only thing that's predictable is the unpredictability and the chaos.
That's true. As soon, every time we see something, we kind of roll our eyes like, okay, that's predictably unpredictable.
Yeah.
You know, we are used to it. And Klaus was right, right? He said the world would become unpredictable. So somebody, I think, is actually just reading from a script, and they know darn well and good what is going to happen. And so what's interesting is, you know, we could talk a little bit about what's going on in Iran, with that's been going on for a little while now. So I think people have talked about it. And like you said, we'll just have to wait and see. We really don't know what to believe when it's said on the news. And is there a ceasefire, and is the strait going to open up, and will oil prices, you know, fluctuate and settle back down? Who knows? We could still have a sleeper cell incident. We could have a false flag incident. There could be a ship sunk. I've heard a number of theories, like one of our carriers might get sunk, and then that would be a good justification to just go in and level the place. Or, you know, who knows? I mean, what we do know is the rhetoric we hear. How about that? Wasn't it on Easter Day or that Trump said, well, I don't know what will happen tonight. We might eliminate a civilization. It's like, who says that? What, you know, unless you're God, and we'll go there in a second. But, you know, in terms of the war and who saw this coming or who predicted it? There's been a lot said about the war and, you know, did we see it coming? Who's behind it? The buildup. But I want to call everyone's attention to a video that played a while ago. And I'm talking about a video recorded by Wesley Clark, General Wesley Clark, an American general who was, an important person shortly after 9/11 in the USA. And you can still go on YouTube, so we might be able to put the link in the description or play a little segment or just show a screenshot from it. The date was October 3rd, 2007. So, you know, we're talking almost 20 years ago. Wesley Clark is said on this video, he's going to the Pentagon. He's briefing with other people. He's actually got an hour or two to spare between briefings with whoever, the Secretary of Defense or whatever, back when we were all about defense instead of, you know, the Secretary of War, which we are today. And he literally gets pulled aside by someone in the Pentagon and says, "Hey, look, sir, are you aware of this mission?" And so they talk about, "No, what are you talking about? I know we're going to look for weapons of mass destruction and look for Saddam Hussein's stash of these things. But this memo that Wesley Clark is shown," and so he's describing it in this talk, "details six or seven countries in the Middle East that the United States is going to move into and do take military action against." And when you hear the list, it's like tick, 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 tick. Every single one of those had been done except Iran. And now where are we? Iran. It's like we are culminating our to-do list that was on the books back since 9/11, or at least since 2007. So I haven't seen anyone else play that video. So if the viewers want to go find that, I think it'd be interesting to hear it from the horse's mouth, that somebody was planning this. And even if they were a lucky guess, wow, we've ticked off all seven. And, you know, you can sort of ask, well, how did they know that? What was the end game? What were they trying to accomplish? I'm sure a lot of things, but I would say, what did they accomplish? They accomplished mass migration and destabilization in many Middle Eastern countries. And look what that's done to Europe and really the rest of the world. So there was a lot that has already been planned. And I guess I'm just trying to point out that whoever's doing this is playing the really long game. This stuff didn't just get cooked up during the Trump administration. It goes back further than that.
Yes, absolutely. I do believe planning for these events has been going on for a very long time, and nothing is random. They have a globalist plan, overall plan that they're trying to work towards, and they have to do it incrementally in stages. Doesn't always go exactly how they want or in the time frame they want. But I do think the point is that there is a long game plan, and Iran obviously fits into that.
And actually, I like finding little clues, little Easter eggs that I think they literally may be Easter eggs that were set out for some people to notice. And so I think in the larger cosmic scheme of things, maybe Satan has to tip his hat a little bit, has to reveal his method, has to at least give the saints something to go on before he does what he does. So another thing we could send a screenshot of and show is that on October 6, 2017, so now we're a whole decade later, but we're still almost a decade ago. I don't know if people remember, there was a famous quote, very cryptic, like Trump often speaks. He's usually braggadocious, but sometimes he says things in a cryptic language. And it was, I don't know what it was. It was some kind of photo op. They were in some room of the White House, and there were a number of people standing and getting photos taken by the press. And out of the blue, Trump says, "This is the calm before the storm." And one of the reporters picks up on it and says, "Sir, what do you mean the calm before the storm?" And he won't clarify. He just says, "It's the calm before the storm." So I got a screenshot of that. That was October 6th. The screenshot I took is out of the New York Times. So it was reported on. So you can just look up the calm before the storm. And so think about that. That's his first term. It was, and he was just sort of speaking a truth he knew, that this term will be calm compared to my next term, which may be, an extra term away. So, I'm 45 and 47, because 47 is going to be the storm. And your last couple interviews with like Joni's interview, that was fantastic, because I've listened to your old archives. I heard the first time that she interviewed on your channel and talked about what she learned, in that exclusive club. Yeah. And it was so great in your most recent interview of her that you brought that back up. Like, most of those things have come to pass.
Yes. Yeah. And I've always been of the opinion that Trump was not an outsider, that he was selected for this role because of the personality he has and the training, you know, he's gone through with his various things, the apprentice and all of that other stuff, and that it was all orchestrated to get him to the presidency with all the supposed angst from the elite against him and all that. I don't believe that the top elites, the top global powers, Luciferians, were ever against Trump. Maybe some of the smaller ones that didn't know the whole picture. But overall, I've always believed that he was put there by the shadow government of the world for a purpose in such a time as this. And so he's a Trojan horse, basically. And you look at a lot of the things he said he would get rid of and the things he would do, he's done none of them. Basically, he's gone the opposite.
Right.
And just with surveillance and things like that and his AI, the money that he's been putting into that and how far that's going, AI and robotics and all of that sort of thing, which is going to work against people, going to work against the population. People are losing their jobs, spying on people more. In fact, just, you know, as I think of it, I might as well say something about it now. You know, Trump was always like, oh, the under Biden, you know, they're against me. Look, they're doing this and this, and they're using the justice system against me and all of that type of thing. And we've got to overturn this, and we've got to overturn Section 702 of the FISA, you know, Act, which is, let me just read it quickly, Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, Section 702. And now Trump's saying that needs to be renewed, you know, and, well, basically it's warrantless spying on Americans, and Trump says he's willing to risk the rights of Americans to keep the government's secret spying powers, and he wants another 18 months renewal of it, which is the type of things he was dead against and ran against, like he was saying, we'll end all the wars and we'll end all the spying and on people and all of that, and yet he is now the guy that's cheerleading all of those things. And interestingly, whilst he wants to get that pushed through again, in Australia, again, it's like the powers of surveillance and how AI and all of these things will be used. Well, Australia has passed an amended law that provides the Australian Security Intelligence Organisation the ability to legally detain or interrogate residents without a warrant and do it indefinitely, and gives the detainees no rights to even alert their friends or family. And so this is the thing. People go, oh, well, it's needed for security and all of that. But all of these things can be used against you when they choose that you're a security risk because you have a certain belief, or you don't follow, you know, maybe you're a climate change denier or something, or you're a Christian that, you know, doesn't believe in something. And they could use these same powers for all sorts of nefarious ways, and the government will have it all legally sewn up in the different countries. And so people need to really be aware how fast all this stuff is developing.
Well, and there, the whole thing is based on and catering to everyone's mass ignorance. People don't seem to have the insight or the discernment or the wisdom to see what's really going on here. So, you know, what's that simple process? Problem, reaction, solution.
Yeah.
So the first step is to create a problem, like, oh, we have a security problem, we have a shooting incident, we have this. So then they have to play it up in everyone's mind so that, oh, yeah, we do live in a dangerous world. We are having cyber attacks. We need a fix for that. So now suddenly they'll agree to draconian measures they never would have agreed to before, until they thought or were driven by emotions and fear that, oh, we have a problem, we need this fix. And not only do they do that for the solutions themselves, all the, you know, techno, what do you call that, when you just think every technological upgrade is an improvement. It's there's a term for that, like techno-optimism. That's it. Right. Techno-optimism. It's sort of like the idea, any technology solution is a good thing. And no one's thinking about, is it really? this could come back to bite us. In fact, it will very quickly. And so, yeah, they've got to create a problem in which they've already got the solution mapped out for us. And then they have to create the scenario that will make us start asking for it, begging for it, or at least accepting it. And then they do the same thing, of course, with the left-right paradigm. So you can, they get in, they have to do a precursor before Trump comes in. So they have a Joe Biden character come, and he does so many crazy things that defy people's common sense that people can't stand it anymore. And they're welcoming Trump again, a second term. And so now, because we welcomed the snake back in, now he's able to do whatever he wants, especially during his second term. And so, yeah, they created a scenario where the people would ask for the solution. And then when we have someone like this in the bull in the China closet, or whatever you want to call him, he's going to do all kinds of things. And the things he's doing, there's no way people would accept them if Biden had tried these things. Yeah. But if Trump does it, well, it's okay. It's for our greater good and for our safety, you know, and we're winning. We love to win, right? Oh my gosh, it's just crazy.
Yes. Yeah.
And here's the thing. So, again, for the listener's benefit, you can verify this. We talked about, hey, maybe we'll do a show together in a week or so. And I sent you some ideas. And I said, you know, I think I'd really like to talk about the ways in which Trump either tries to look like, or people hold him up as a messianic figure, as a messiah, as a godlike or God-ordained or God chosen figure. And literally the next day he puts out that meme, that tweet from his Truth Social, whatever, and there he is dressed like Jesus with a healing in his hands and power and light coming as a light bearer for Jesus, healing someone. Who's he healing? Is that Jeff Epstein? I don't know. He looks a little like it to me, you know, but there he is in a messianic figure. And finally some Christians spoke up. And so we don't need to belabor the point. There's a number of people that made a point like, this is blasphemy. What are you doing? And then suddenly, you know, okay, let's reel it back a little bit. Oh, I was just, I like the image. I was just a doctor for the Red Cross. Like, I don't see any Red Crosses. I don't see any stethoscopes. You don't look like a doctor at all. Come on. How blatant a lie do you have to paint a picture? So it's just cracks me up that, like, he stole my thunder a little bit. He made an example of exactly what I'm talking about. And so it's nice to see other people noted that. In fact, I sent you another screenshot just before we got on today, where a couple other channels, including Spencer Smith and a few others, had noted, you know, made their commentary about this latest meme. But I didn't even see this previous one. There's one where, again, Trump posted this, and it's like Jesus is, they're touching foreheads, almost like a meeting of the minds, and, oh, you know, aren't you're my man, basically, like you're my appointed servant. And that's what I really think is worth calling out and talking about today, is look at how many people not only worship him as a hero and a conquering hero, but literally ascribe messianic traits to him. And so now the point I want to make is, how much of this is orchestrated and planned? And so here's an exercise anyone can do, is just ask AI, in what ways is Trump similar to Jesus, or does he have a messianic-like qualities of Jesus? And it's fascinating what, you know, even AI will tell you and point out for you. It's some of the things that I noted. It's just, here's the thing, Christians, if you aren't awake now, you're never going to wake up. It couldn't be any more obvious than it is now that this man thinks he's the Messiah. Or I like to look at it this way. There's that phrase that the Satanists or Luciferians like to do, as above, so below. And to me, what that's saying is Satan is going to try to mimic, mirror, and mock, I would say, or have for himself the same things the real Messiah has. So if the real Messiah gets worshiped and gets glory and honor, he wants worship and glory and honor. And so there's going to be lots of parallels to where he or his people, and I know people spend a lot of time thinking, like, is Trump the Antichrist? I don't know. But it says in Scripture there are many Antichrists that have already been released on the earth. And that was at the time the book was written. So what that tells me is that there is a spirit of Antichrist, people working against the Christian message, that have always existed. So to me, that's sort of what I'm trying to point out about Trump is like, look at the ways he is deliberately portrayed, held up, and embraces himself and other and loves the adulation. We had something Paula White from his Office of Faith Matters, you know, was just comparing him right before Easter, like, oh, you know, Donald Trump, you know, we love you and you sacrifice like Jesus, yada, yada. And here's a big one that got my attention is remember the whole ear thing, right? So in the aftermath of that, people were saying lines like, God saved you. God intervened because you are about to be taken out. But, you know, it was a close call. Thank goodness, you know, God sent that bullet an inch further in one direction so that you could continue the messianic mission he has for you. So that's one level, right? Maybe, you know, Donald Trump was probably appointed. Well, he wants to say, yeah, I was appointed by God. He loves that. And his people love that reference. But let's go a layer deeper. There's a couple passages in the Old Testament that talk about when a servant wants to proclaim he's still a servant in his master's household, he will serve him forever voluntarily. It talks about piercing the ear with an awl on a doorpost. And I wonder if that was also sort of a as above, so below ritual that said, notice it didn't miss him. It didn't go, you know, didn't kill him. It didn't hit any vital organs. What did it do? It grazed or pierced the ear. At least we're led to believe that. So you know, I'm wondering, was that an as above, so below ritual to say, look, I've been identified as a servant of, you know, the Most High, and here's my credentials. It was something performed in a public way. You all got to observe it. I mean, that's what the Old Testament reference talks about. Like, it's a person who willingly commits themselves to being essentially a slave to their master. So I know that was a lot, but what are any thoughts on, like, look at all these religious imagery and symbolism that seems like Trump is living out or portrayed as?
It's very obvious, and there's another one after that meme that he put out holding the light and all that, where, you know, where he was with Jesus, you know, and Jesus was like comforting him or something type of an image. I'll put that one up on the screen as well. But isn't it also interesting the similarity between the image and the tarot card image?
Yes, Spencer Smith pointed that one out too. It's like, are you that character? And notice one hand's up, one hand's down. Yeah. So as above, so below. And you know, there's a couple other tarot cards that you wonder, is he fulfilling? But, you know, or some of the things that are happening. The enough is enough card is another one. You know, people just get fed up and do things out of anger. Yeah. And even in the image, again, that was the doctor image, right? There's three figures in the back. And one of them, some people point out, is that the Baphomet?
Yeah.
You know, you got a Baphomet, like a devil character in the middle, flanked by two other people. And, you know, someone said, oh, no, those are firefighters or first responders or something.
With a crown with three horns on it. Yeah, right.
Yeah. All of these, it's getting to the point that's laughable. You know what, honestly, from a personal faith standpoint, this is where if you call yourself a Christian and you aren't awake to this, that raises some serious questions. And, you know, I think come our own, everyone will face a judgment day, right? Where, you know, what did you do with my son Jesus and how did you live? And there's going to be people who are going to say, well, didn't I do these things in your name? Lord, Lord, didn't I do these? And he's going to say, depart. I never knew you. And that means you never knew me. In other words, you were a false witness. So some of these Christians that somehow are using Christianity and the faith as a way to justify and believe in what's going on in the political realm. If you don't see through this now, I don't know what more to say. I really think almost, you know, just like when the Lord allowed the devil to afflict Job, he put boundaries. You can do this, but you can't do that. You can't take his life, kind of thing. I almost sense like, you know, you can be a trickster and fool the masses, but every once in a while, you got to tip your hat. You got to show who you really are. And so in some ways, doesn't that put the burden on all of us individually? Like, if you've been given these hints and you still don't see it, So to me, we're almost done with hints. There's no question, you know, what team is this, who's running this world? And what team are these actors on the world stage on? I think it's just so obvious.
And that's as we are. I've always had a problem with other people, ministers and various ministries and things that were saying, you've got to get out and vote for Donald Trump before the last election because, you know, God's put him there, chosen him there. If you vote for anyone else, you know, I don't even think you are a Christian or, you know, but they launched putting Trump up there as somehow God's candidate. And this was people that should have known better, people that have studied end times and even the Illuminati and how does do they work with the as above, so below, and with the Hegelian dialectic controlling the left and the right. And yet these people were still like so adamant that you had to vote for Donald Trump or you're hardly a Christian or something like that. And they should have known better. And how many of those now are coming out and saying we were wrong? I don't know of any of them that are basically right. Really. That this,
because they call into question their whole ministry. And I would say, I think we should call into question your whole ministry. If you lack the wisdom and discernment on that, what else have you lacked wisdom and discernment on, you know?
Yeah.
And that sounds a little harsh, but, you know, sometimes at election time, we hear phrases like, well, we just got to choose, you know, hold your nose and choose the lesser of two evils. Mm. Well, the lesser of two evils is still evil. We've been bought into and been mind taught, you know, brainwashed, propagandized into thinking like this is the way it is. There's a dielectric. You've only got two choices. There is no viable third party. So just pick one. And so they shape our world so that, yeah, it's obvious who's going to get picked this time and who's going to get picked that time. Did we talk about the way a sailboat moves through the water and how it tacks left and right? I think we might have.
Yeah.
I just still love that image. That I just think of that there's left and right paradigm. You know, the world, we're going to make the world go left for a while, and then we're going to go right for a while and left. And in the end, we're still advancing somewhere.
Yeah.
But it's through a left-right paradigm.
Yeah, so still zigzag. Going to the same ultimate destination. Yeah, yep. That's how I've seen it as well. You take the left path or the right path, but you're still going to the same destination. That's still where they want to ultimately take you. And sometimes it's easier for them to get something passed if you're a right wing, some legislation or whatever, or if you're a left wing, they can get this one done. But eventually they all tie in together to get you to the same place that they ultimately want, which is ultimately world government. And basically, also, you know, you've got all this things like CBDCs and stable coins and tokenization and all of those things, digital IDs, all being pushed, the agenda being advanced and pushed forward for all of those things constantly, and it has advanced a lot. And so that's one other thing. And then they've got this people like Elon Musk with his Optimus robot and all of those types of things, and Starlink and all this technology that the elites can use. It was interesting too. I just saw a little thing this morning about in Beijing, I think it was in China, a humanoid robot won a half marathon, basically ran a half marathon in world record time. That's a humanoid robot. Now, it wasn't that many years ago where if you saw a robot that could actually run and not fall over, it was quite a thing. Now they're running at you know, breakneck speed. And you imagine at some point they put guns into the hands of these things or, man.
It's super easy to imagine. Honestly, if you, like something that can keep me up tonight at night, thinking like, man, that would be a huge dystopia is what you're talking about, the robotics. And I almost see the convergence of two or three types of robotics, right? You have, first you have robotic dogs. You've seen those come out.
Yeah.
And if you notice, the back of the dog is straight and it's a rail. It's a mounting rail for accessories, including flamethrowers and rifles.
Yeah.
So you've already got a dog and now the head, the little face of the dog is a LIDAR, a radar. So it is very accurate in terms of self-guidance. It knows how to navigate. So you've got robotic dogs, then you have robotic people, like you said, that now they can run and dance and hip hop, and everyone's, you know, they got all these influencers interacting with them on videos on YouTube. saying, isn't this cool? Isn't it hip? And they do all these dances. Well, yeah, they're already superhuman. And now I've noticed both of them, they have versions where the feet have wheels on them. Mm. So the dog and now even some humanoids, you can roll fast on, you know, paved surfaces, and then the wheel can be locked up and now it can step like a dog and go upstairs. So it can, like, you can amalgamate all these things into a device that carries a payload, carries lethal weapons and surveillance, and now it can roll, run, walk, climb. It can, how will you escape this thing? And then who knows what technology it will carry on its back, whether it's through the wall type stuff or you know, surveillance. And then of course the other kind of robot, I think we should think of these as robots, is drones. So the drones can fly around, and all these things are have their own AI of capture avoidance mechanisms, to where you can't even shoot a drone down. It knows to move and dodge and weave. So you combine all these things, it won't be long at all if they aren't already sitting in a warehouse, of robots that just give it up. And notice the Venezuela thing, right? What if they mentioned there, somehow the American commandos did a fantabulous job and they went in and got the job done, and they're praising how effective they were and how they didn't have to do a lot of collateral damage and, you know, get their lethality. And have you heard of something called the discombobulator? I guess it's some sort of non-lethal, non-destructive weapon. I don't know whether they send microwaves or sound waves or some kind of waves, but basically they can immobilize a person. So it doesn't matter if they have guns or bulletproof vests. They just discombobulate you. I mean, imagine that mounted on the local police officer in your local town or on the, and it'll make sense. They'll show us more crimes and people are getting crazy. There was something on the news the other night. Somebody shot and killed 7 of their own children last night, I think. I watch very little news, so I don't need to be aware of these things. But again, all we need is a few of those to say, we do need these robots, and why should we put at risk the lives of these brave men and women in blue, uniforms? We need a robot to do that.
Well, it's actually interesting, just before I lose my track too, on the subject, there was a week or so ago, I saw an article where the Ukraine was saying that they'd used some like AI equipped robots. I think they might have been like track driven ones, like a little bulldozer type tracks or tank tracks, but that they'd cornered and captured a Russian unit. I don't know how many soldiers. I don't think it was a large number of them, but they used no Ukrainian soldiers. They just used these AI and robot-powered things to corner and capture some Russians that surrendered. And they were saying that's the first time that's been done.
I mean, how are you going to hide from that? Where are you going to go? And so, I think they've got us. There's been some predictive programming. I mean, even something as the science fiction film Star Wars. There is the Clone Wars. Well, those are really just drone robots, So the idea that there could be a manufactured warehouse full of robots ready to go. I mean, they may say they're building automotive manufacturing plants, but soon the robots will be able to build the robots and then have them deployable, So all the data warehouses that are going up, that'll be able to control the robots, etc. Here's something that might tie all this together. And even land the plane. I don't keep track of how long we've been on already, but I used to watch more media, but there was a TV series in the US called The X-Files. And it was popular for a while. It was kind of interesting. It, entertained all these ideas of space invaders and aliens and all that. Well, the show went off the air and then they rebooted it, in the more recent past. And they actually had the original two actors, Scully and Mulder, whoever their real names are. They're the main two characters, and there they were. So I haven't watched many of it, but there was one episode, and it was from April 6, 2019 is when it aired. And we can put a link or a screenshot for that. And it was the most bizarre episode I've ever seen. And talk about predictive programming. So in the whole episode, these are two, like, mystery solvers, right? They're sleuths. They're out trying to unravel mysteries. And the whole episode, there's almost zero dialogue throughout the whole show. And so all it shows is Scully and Mulder, this man and woman who always seem to have a thing for each other. Maybe they're dating or whatever. And you see them go into a restaurant, a sushi restaurant, and they're sitting there and they're not talking to each other and they're looking at their phones. And so it's all about technology. And then when their food is ready, a robot comes out and delivers it. And then you look around, there's nobody else in the whole restaurant. And when it's done, I guess they try and pay, but they decided they didn't want to leave a tip. And so the whole storyline of the episode is that the robot employee of the restaurant is angry that he didn't get a tip from the people. And so somehow he's able to send out a virus. And you see as Scully and Mulder both leave and go home, you watch all their technology run amok. You know, like their car won't drive right. When they get to their house, their doors aren't unlocking right. When they go inside, their fireplace, which has a controller to it, like everything's a smart this, a smart that, right? Yeah. Smart home, smart lock, smart fireplace. The fireplace is burning. They, you know, all kinds of things are going kafu. And eventually it gets to the point where drones and little creeping spider and other robots are all coming after them. And the funny part at the end is like, okay, they paid the tip, they paid the fee, they paid, you know, and all the technology released them again. And then they end up going to a more human diner at the end and saying, oh, aren't we glad, you know, we can still find a place as humans. But all that to say, even when it came out in, 2019, I remember watching it thinking, okay, I get it. This is sci-fi. It's dystopia, whatever. But every single thing I saw in that episode in 2019 was doable. Yeah. It wasn't our norm, but they weren't showing like something futuristic that doesn't exist, like transporting your body through space, yeah, like Star Trek did in 1969. You know, so everything they showed could be done.
Yeah.
And it, to me, it just showed the future. Like, yeah, if you don't play along by the rules and your social credit app from China and you aren't up to date or you've been convicted of wrong thought, wrong speech, like appearing on shows like this, saying things that they don't want you to say, they can shut down your house, your technology, and you won't be able to buy or sell or even transact a meal at a restaurant. Like, technology will rule the day, and it can be, it can run amok. So yeah, these robots. And honestly, so I get home, right, and I'm driving home from the airport and all, and I stopped at a newly remodeled McDonald's. And I know y'all have McDonald's there.
Yeah.
Thankfully, not nearly as many as we do. We have them on every corner, pretty much, yeah, right? And I walked in there, and as I had my experience, I thought, you know, I've never been in prison yet for and eaten in a prison cafeteria, but I think this is what a prison cafeteria would be like. Everything's bolted down. Nothing's very comfortable. Things are generic. There's nobody at the counter. You have a kiosk to order from, and it immediately prompts you, like, don't you want to order with your app? Don't you want rewards? And I'm thinking, like, no, don't want an app, don't want your rewards, don't want to be part of your system, but they're making it so you almost can't. There is a sign near what's left of a front counter, a tiny little front counter. If you need assistance, and I think there was a little bell, like ring the bell.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, this is, you see where we're being led.
Yes.
And yet it all seems like, oh, it's convenience. Don't you want the rewards, a free fries? I think they were trying to get us to get a vaccine for a free fry back in 2020. So yeah. I'm just saying, it's so obvious where we're being led slowly down a path that's always techno-optimistic. You know, the technology is going to be so much better if you'll use your phone to, you know, to access these things, when in reality, we're being required to authenticate who we are and present credentials. And if you don't have credentials or we don't like your credentials, too bad. So sad.
So. Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good way of wrapping that up. I guess now, you know, that's all where things are going and what's happening. And as Christians, though, we can't let ourselves become totally overwhelmed and become very negative and hopeless. You know, we need to still have hope, and our hope has to be in Jesus Christ. I guess ultimately our hope is not for this life, it's for the next one. And we should be living with eternity in mind. But it is important that we are still able to function in this world while we're here. And it is getting increasingly difficult to see how, as Christians, we're going to be able to do that outside of the system. But I don't know. I think folks need to do what prepping they can spiritually and physically, any way you can, pray about it and ask God to show you what to do in this time to be able to negotiate the I think, increasingly difficult times that are going to be ahead of us.
I agree. And I'm as you're speaking, the passage that comes to mind somewhere in Scripture, I'd have to look it up, where it says, work while you still can, while it is still daylight, because a time will come when no one is able to work. Mm. You know, so they're obviously making a reference to farming, right? Farmers are generally up with the sun and they're down when the sun is down. So they only have so many hours they need to work while it's daylight, you know, make hay while the sun shines or something. Yeah. So, but from a scriptural standpoint, a biblical, I think that's what it's saying. While you still can, do something productive for yourself, your family, others who might be believers. Do so, because there will come a time when you won't be able to work.
Yes, so, yeah, absolutely. That's a good thought. Yeah. All right. So this has been a great discussion, Eric. I've thoroughly enjoyed having you on again. And folks, if you know, you can find some of Eric's articles at our website, aminutetomidnight.com. You haven't written any for a little while, but there are some good ones on there if anyone wants to read them at aminutetomidnight.com. So thanks, Eric, and we'll have to do another show again together pretty soon, because I think that one was really enjoyable. I loved your insights into things.
Amen. Likewise, and maybe we can start our planning for when we can get together again in person.
Absolutely. Cheers.
Take care.
Folks, remember to like this video and please share it. It definitely helps the channel out. And make sure you subscribe to us at our YouTube channel. We also have Apple Podcast channel, and please subscribe to us at our website, aminutetomidnight.com as well. And A Minute to Midnight is run 100% by donations. Don't do any advertising, don't do any selling of anything or affiliate marketing or any other things like that. If you want to help us out to keep this running, donations are always appreciated, and you can do that at aminutetomidnight.com. And the music used, I've written, played and recorded. God blessing, God willing, we will be back with another show in a few days' time. Until then, keep your eyes on the Lord and stay safe.